It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, it's a good thing we had 11 minutes of extra broadcasting last night because we got we're 9 minutes late today. Don't ask. But I'm here, you know, we're here, and, you know, sometimes things just happen. But, you know, hey, here it is, the 28th day of July 2020. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. That's where all the cool kids go. Who want to augment their live listening experience with the madcap, wild, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. If you pop by here in the near future, with your screen name and your password, you know, just click on chat room and, Anatole's waiting for you, Ralph's is waiting for you, Roger and Oregon's waiting for you, as are Squeaky and Stockton Larry, all ready for a rollicking good time over the next not quite 3 hours of live, independent, liberal, progressive, commercial-free, non-capitalist broadcasting. Hot diggity. All capably moderated, of course, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, third-stage guild navigators take summer vacation. And the man cave is a no-space-folding zone right now. Yeah, hi, I'm Bob. It is Titanic Tuesday, and if you ever wanted a master class of full steam ahead at that there iceberg Trump-tanic intellect, it was on display today in the House of Representatives. Yes, this was the day when Bill Pepe the Frog Barr decided to... Or as I saw him referred to earlier, Atticus Lynch, decided to actually respond to a request and go and testify before the before Jerry Nadler's committee in the House. Mm-hmm. But before we dive into all of that, the standard disclaimer applies. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is certainly no different. Thanks go out to our 28th day of the month subscribers. And that would be thanks to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thanks to Sharon. Thanks to Sunan. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. And where do we stand now? Oh, thanks to Jeremy for getting us started for the evening. Fundraising goal stands, at $449. $449 to catch us up to today, $49 to finish last week, $200 yesterday, $200 today. And so that's where things are. It was $454, but Jeremy got us down to $449. And it would be great to go ahead and wipe out that last bit of last week so that we can go ahead and start sweating the end of July. But, you know, bills are awaiting payment. They always are. And if you'd like to be, if you'd like to help out, there's many ways you can. There's Venmo. There's PayPal. The interface is right there at the on the main page at headon.live. If you'd like to be a subscriber, just click the little box that says make this recurring. There's Patreon. And if you go to headon.live and click on contribute, the Patreon interface is there. Then there's the United States Postal Service. And I'm happy to announce I didn't get over there, but I did give them a call and check to make sure it had arrived. Thank you very kindly to Irish Dave for jumping in via the U.S. Postal Service. And thank you to our monthly subscriber, Brandon. Thank you, Brandon and Fennell, up in the greater New York City area. Thank you very kindly indeed. The U.S. Postal Service address is there on the at headon.live, but it's The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okay? Now, get to the business of today. It is Trump-tanic Tuesday. It is a day for taking note of titanic levels of intellect. And the beating heart of all of that was in the House of Representatives today as, among other things, Jim Shorts Jordan and his fellow travelers decided to pout their way through the hearing, refusing to wear their masks, proving themselves to be COVIDiots. Pramila Jayapal. Whoa. It was not a good day for Pepe the Frog Bar at all, but Pramila Jayapal was not at all, was not at all impressed with Pepe the Frog. Talking about the Lafayette Square incident, she took issue with his fascist tendencies.
In Lafayette Park. Let us not be distracted by you or my GOP colleagues as to what these powerful and massive protests were actually about. They were about the persistent killing of black bodies by law enforcement. And finally, an awakening in America of the conscience of our country. And yet your response, Mr. Barr, was to direct federal officers to close in on the protesters and to use shields offensively as weapons, tear gas, pepper balls, irritants, explosive devices, batons, and horses to clear the area just so the president could get a photo op. So I do want to ask you, do you think the response at Lafayette Square to tear gas, pepper spray, and beat and protesters and injure American citizens who were just simply exercising their First Amendment rights was appropriate?
Well, first, it's my understanding that no tear gas was used on Monday, June 1st.
Mr. Barr, that is a semantic distinction that has been proven false by many fact checkers.
How is it semantic? How is it semantic? Tear gas is a particular compound.
You talked about chemical irritants, and it has been proven false by reports. So just answer the question. Do you think that it is appropriate at Lafayette Park to pepper spray, tear gas, and beat protesters and injure American citizens?
Well, I don't accept your characterization of what happened, but as I explained, the effort...
Oh, well, he doesn't accept her characterization. Maybe there is... And this is not a critique of what Representative Jayapal was doing. It is merely a suggestion on how we use the language. Instead of saying tear gas, pepper balls, pepper spray, blah, blah, it is far more effective to say, and it is more inclusive, really, to ask, do you approve of the use of chemical agents that are banned on the battlefield against unarmed American citizens exercising their constitutional rights? Do you see the distinction? Because there is one. And that's an absolutely true statement. Everything they're using, especially tear gas, is banned on the battlefield. And just ponder that for a moment. It's not okay to use these weapons against other people who have guns and can defend themselves. But we persist in this country in allowing police to use it against unarmed citizens exercising their constitutional rights. And all that has to happen is for the cops to declare, this is an illegal assembly. And then the tear gas canisters and the pepper spray and so forth starts flying. Do you think it would have been, I mean, okay, we're talking about the Attorney General of the United States here, a man of next to no conscience, zero morality, and nothing but a pure amphibian creature in favor of the exercise of naked right-wing fascist power. Granted. But for people watching at home, watching her, Representative Jayapal. Well, when you describe them accurately as chemical weapons, I think it gathers or it suggests a greater degree of moral outrage among people who have, well, morals, you know, unlike the Attorney General Pepe the Frog. Let's continue.
There was,
Mr. Barr, I just asked for a yes or no. So let me just tell you, I'm starting to lose my temper. According to sworn testimony before the House Natural Resources Committee by Army National Guard Officer Adam DeMarco, who was there, this was, quote, an unprovoked escalation and excessive use of force against peaceful protesters.
Well,
Sir, the president told governors on a telephone call that the way to deal with the protesters of police brutality and systemic racism like in Lafayette Square is that, quote, you have to get much tougher. You have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. These are terrorists. And he also talked about you on that call, sir. Here's what he said. He said, the attorney general is here, Bill Barr, and we will activate Bill Barr and activate him strongly. Do you remember that call, Mr. Barr?
Yes, I do. But he wasn't talking about
Frogbots assemble.
About protesters. He was talking about rioters.
Mr. Barr, apparently the president believes that you can be activated to implement the president's agenda and dominate American people exercising First Amendment rights if they're protesting against him. But let's look at how you respond when the protesters are supporters of the president.
Ouch, this is going to sting.
On two separate occasions, after President Trump tweeted, "Liberate Michigan," to subvert stay-home orders to protect the public health of people in Michigan. Protesters swarmed the Michigan Capitol carrying guns, some with swastikas, Confederate flags, and one even with a dark-haired doll with a noose around its neck. Are you aware that these protesters called for the governor to be lynched, shot, and beheaded?
No.
You're not aware of that?
I was not aware of it.
Major protests in Michigan, you're the attorney general, and you didn't know that the protesters called for the governor to be lynched, shot, and beheaded. So obviously you couldn't be concerned about that.
Well, there are a lot of protests around the United States, and
the thing was, back then there weren't. Back then there weren't. Because if you recall this program, that protest, that those right-wing butthurt protests dominated the news specifically because of the stupidity of the Ted Nugent convention cosplayers showing up with their freedom protectors and saying, we're living under tyranny in Michigan because she won't let us mow our snow. I wants to mow my snow. So, assuming that they actually swore him in, he's perjuring himself in that moment. Because whatever his definition of lots of protests is, they were almost all of them right-wing protests against Democratic governors trying to save their citizenry from a brutal virus that was burning through the country. Just beginning to burn through the country. The screaming outside the governor's mansion in Frankfort, Kentucky. The full-on assault against the Michigan State House in Lansing. But he's going to sit there because, you know, he's being questioned by a brown woman. And he's going to obfuscate and pettifog. It would have gratified me to no end. Not that that's the standard or anything. But it would have gratified me to no end if maybe Representative Jayapal would have turned to Representative Nadler and I say, I move we draft articles of impeachment against Bill Barr right now. Do I get a second? That would have been potent.
On June 1st,
Attorney General Barr,
I was worried about the District of Columbia, which
is federal. Protests in certain parts of the country, you're very aware of those, but when protesters with guns and swastikas
Excuse me, Mr. Barr, this is my time,
and I control it. You are aware of certain kinds of protesters, but in Michigan, when protesters carry guns and Confederate flags and swastikas and call for the governor of Michigan to be beheaded and shot and lynched, somehow you're not aware of that. Somehow you didn't know about it, so you didn't send federal agents in to do to the president's supporters what you did to the president's protesters. In fact, you didn't put pepper balls on those protesters. So the point I'm trying to make here, Mr. Barr, that I think is very important for the country to understand, is that there is a real discrepancy in how you react as the attorney general, the top cop in this country, when white men with swastikas storm a government building with guns. There is no need for the president to, quote, activate you because they're getting the president's personal agenda done. But when black people and people of color protest police brutality, systemic racism, and the president's very own lack of response to those critical issues, then you forcibly remove them with armed federal officers, pepper bombs, because they are considered terrorists by the president. You take an aggressive approach to Black Lives Matter protests, but not to right-wing extremists threatening to lynch a governor if it's for the Trump's, if it's for the president's benefit. Did I get it right, Mr. Barr?
I have responsibility for the federal government, and the White House is the seat of the executive
branch. Mr. Barr, let me just make it clear. You are supposed to represent the people of the United States of America, not violate people's First Amendment rights. You are supposed to uphold democracy and secure equal justice under the law, not violently dismantle certain protesters based on the president's personal agenda.
Gentlelady's time has expired.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask unanimous consent to also introduce into the record a report from the MIT Election Data and Science Lab, which says that over the past 20 years, more than 250 million ballots have been cast by mail, and the fraud rate is 0.00006%.
Without objection, Ms. Reschenthaler.
Damn.
Welcome to Rollins.
I am so glad that the good people of Seattle, Washington, sent Pramila Jayapal to the House of Representatives. Because that was a masterclass in how to dismantle a crooked fascist attorney general. And it was like that the better part of the day. And I don't know what goes on in what passes for his mind. Indeed, Randy in PA, and thank you, Randy. That takes us down to $3.99. Thank you, Randy. Because there was a glitch with his subscription. And a note. I got a pair of challenges. The first one came in from Alma. A $50 challenge for the success of the judiciary today in grilling the AG. Let's call that the Pepe the Frog. Hopping on hot iron challenge, courtesy of Alma. And then Steve in New York says, the challenge of all challenges, I'll put up a $10 challenge. However, the person who meets it needs to be a new person. If one person meets it, I'll send them a jar of one of these of their choice, and it won't break. TBJ uncured bacon jam or TBJ uncured bacon jam with honey and habanero. Whoa. So need a brand new contributor to kick in $10 and then send me your mailing address, and I will then send it to Steve, and Steve will send along a jar of bacon jam to you. Yum, yum. So we got $60 in challenges out there. And that would make that would take us down from $3.99 to $2.79, and that would be huge. Okay. Steve further notes, Bill Barr, that fucker is the very definition of the banality of evil. Truly, Bob, he is evil. And he's also a museum quality exhibit of what we have so often argued on this program. That the problems, well, Trump is a great big whopping pus-oozing symptom of a much larger disease that's been afflicting this country for a generation at least. We talked about this some last night. The disease is the GOP and what it has been. And you know, you can pick whatever date you want. I think one of the most significant dates in terms of the metamorphosis of the GOP into a purely toxic political insurgency against constitutional governance, it probably comes the day after the thrashing of Barry Goldwater. Or maybe it was the fact that the GOP nominated Barry Goldwater. And now Barry Goldwater is lauded as a good Republican. And he campaigned, as noted last night, he campaigned on the idea of starting nuclear wars. So, yeah. But the disease has been metastasizing through our body politic arguably since before I was born. Remember how John Kennedy was warned that he was going into nut country when he took his trip in November 1963 to Dallas. There were a number of people who were worried about that, and with good reason. Darlene in Connecticut says, I love how Pramila reamed out that horrid pig Debbie Lasko about her disrespectful pronunciation of her name, referring to as Jayapal with a long A multiple times. Pramila called her out, and I paraphrase, if you're going to quote me, pronounce my name properly, it's Jayapal with a long I. I loved it, and Lasko didn't mess with Pramila and complied in a split second. Right, because, remember, they are chicken shits. They are most assuredly chicken shits. And this is the particular moment that Darlene refers to, and it was a dandy.
Mr. Attorney General, is that your understanding of what happened there? Do you agree with Ms. Jayapal that there was no takeover? It was just
Jayapal. If you're going to say my name, please say it right. It's Jayapal.
Jayapal? Would you agree with that?
Yeah. She's only been there a couple of years. And somehow Debbie Lasko of Arizona Stan can't quite remember how to pronounce her name. Right. Sure. And what Representative Jayapal alluded to in regard to mail-in ballots that MIT found 0.00006% ballot fraud with mail-in ballots. That point got hammered home and then countersunk.
To follow up on some questions from one of my colleagues, you testified earlier that you have at times voted by mail. Is that correct?
I remember, I think, once voting by mail.
So if public records show you voted by mail in 2012 and 2019, you'd agree with that?
I can't really remember the details. Okay. I think on one occasion I had to go to a station and vote before the election. Yeah.
I raise this because in May of this year, 800 public health experts from across the nation sent a letter urging Congress to, quote, prepare for a presidential election by mail to allow Americans to vote from home and assure their health and safety. You're aware that health experts have emphasized that voting by mail is critical to protect public health in this upcoming election, correct?
When was that?
In May of this year. Huh. If you're not aware of it, I can provide
this to your staff.
Yeah. Great. I have an extra copy for you. So that public health advice to follow up.
He might have. He's not sure. I mean, he's a very busy man. Right. But it is a public health issue. There's no there's no challenge to that. And so, under questioning from Representative Debbie McCarthy Powell, a Democrat from Florida, about the whole chemical warfare against American citizens exercising their First Amendment rights. Well, she took him to task, but then she also called his morality into question. Because, as pointed out frequently on this program, they are, in fact, the Bill Barrs of the world and whatnot. Well, this country is being held hostage by bioterrorists, like Bill Barr.
Inspired, Ms. McCarthy Powell.
Mr. Barr, good afternoon. I'm glad that you mentioned Latin America a little bit earlier. You know, many of my constituents that I represent in Florida fled to America from countries that used deadly force to stifle speech, and they used armed forces to suppress dissenting voices. They cherish our Constitution, as other Americans have done for generations, because of the incredible freedoms and rights that being an American citizen gives to all of us. It's extremely personal to me because you probably know that my roots are in Ecuador, but I live by the American Constitution. And it's true that those who weren't fortunate enough to always have these rights and freedoms sometimes cherish them even more than those who have always had them. When they see photos from Portland, they don't see the American ideal or the America that they know. They actually see and are reminded what they left behind. You would agree with me on that. Are you listening, Mr. Barr?
Well, I wasn't sure.
Take a look at this.
Who was the subject of that last sentence?
Just, you know, when
who
you
honor,
see,
who,
look,
who?
Look at these videos for one second. Yeah. We have seen violence in Venezuela at the hands of Maduro, firing tear gas at protesters and using brutal tactics to crush demonstrations. That's what we see from dictators on both the left and the right. But it's hard to distinguish these photos from those events and from the videos that we've seen by U.S. federal police in Portland tear gassing and breaking the bones of a peacefully protesting U.S. Navy veteran. Very similar. So, Mr. Barr, how do you restore the confidence of my constituents in the values of this country when every night on television they're seeing these images of violence used against the peaceful protesters? We all denounce violence. How do you restore the trust in our democracy?
I think that the force is being deployed against rioters or in situations where protesters are not following police directions.
Most of the protests have been peaceful, Mr. Barr. You know that.
And the fact of the matter is, on the 26th in Portland, and the video is all over the place, a mother, a young woman, armed with nothing but a cell phone, completely by herself, was tackled and savagely beaten by a gang of Barr's little green goons. And it is some of the most sickening video that I have seen in a while. And there's a lot of it. And she refers to broken bones, and she's talking about the Navy vet who had his hand smashed by a little green goon. Some mercenary, contractor, whatever. Nameless and faceless, because that's how fascists like it. But I guess the woman by herself was, what, not obeying police directives? How? Or the little girl that was beaten by LAPD cops again, by herself, because mobs of rioting cops don't do things on their own. They always act in a group because that's how gangs operate. There are too many of these videos to recount. But Bill Barr, well, Pepe the Frog. Yeah, they're all dangerous rioters.
You know that. You're just using language for political purposes, just like my colleagues across the aisle. Let me just go now to one of the most important topics facing our nation right now, healthcare. You know, in my district, we have close to 100,000 people that get their health insurance through the ACA. 19,000 of them are living with serious pre-existing conditions. And yet you are working to strip their health care at the worst possible moment, when the coronavirus is killing thousands of people in my state. In Miami-Dade County and in Monroe counties, counties that I represent, do you know how many people have died from COVID-19?
No, I don't.
1,410 people.
Mm-hmm.
You were at the White House on March 23rd when President Trump said Governor DeSantis was doing an incredible job. Do you agree that Governor DeSantis is doing an incredible job?
Well, I have no reason not to believe that.
Well, I mean, there's 1,410 reasons in, you know, one congressional district alone, but you know, who's counting?
Well, Florida now has more cases than in China.
Well, did Cuomo do an incredible job in New York?
Unfortunately, and I'm not proud to say this, in Florida we have more cases than most countries combined around the world. So, no, he is not doing an incredible job. You push states to open too soon. You threaten states with lawsuits.
I didn't ask states to open.
You threaten with lawsuits for those states wanted to have stay-at-home orders, Mr.
For things
Barr,
like church.
We have.
Yeah, church. Here. Oh, by the way, let's check in with church, by all means, Pepe. Yesterday, we had the story of the church in Colorado, where they won't be doing a healing service now, at least not in person, because the preacher figured out, Andrew Womack, that he could get the Rona. And then how's he going to enjoy all those sweet, sweet, sweet tax-free dollars if he's, you know, horizontally crucified on his belly with a garden hose down his throat? That was Colorado. He wanted churches to open. Churches, says Bill Pepe the Frog Barr. Well, by God, the church has opened. And for this, we go to Alabama. Thanks, Merle. And a little community called, and it just sounds like a delightful place, doesn't it? Strawberry, Alabama. Well, heck, who wouldn't want to live in Strawberry, Alabama? It's about, 60 miles or so northeast of Birmingham in Marshall County, I think. Yeah. Well, there in Strawberry, Alabama, they got the Warrior Creek Missionary Baptist Church that is headed up by a preacher by the name of Daryl Ross. And, of course, we could have saved this for tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday. But no, because it works perfectly. Yeah, well, I mean, he was only threatening states that were keeping the churchy people from gathering and LARPing and smolicking and grabulating all over each other. That's all. Just the churches, because First Amendment. Never mind that the Supreme Court has since handed Pepe the Frog his ass coming out of Nevada. But in Strawberry, Alabama, at the Warrior Creek Missionary Baptist Church, well, Pastor Daryl Ross says the whole church has got it just about. The it, of course, being the Rona. Yeah. And so what it was is they had themselves a revival. That's a big thing in your evangelical churches. There's preachers out there all over the place, and you know, just as comedians go on the road so too do evangelical preachers. And they'll go and preach in a different church, and they call it, for those of you who don't know, they call it revival. And whereas the church generally, you know, has services Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday, whatever, during revival week, you go to church every night, and you get revived. You get your Christianity all recharged, and you get filled full of the Holy Spirit and the power of the Lord. Well, there at the Warrior Creek Missionary Baptist Church, they had themselves some revival. And last week, everybody went to church every night. But by the time last Friday rolled around, they shut down the revival. Because one of the folks who attended had done tested positive for the Rona. Now, that person didn't have any symptoms, but went out and got tested when several of his co-workers had positive tests. And then, as the weekend this past progressed, Pastor Ross said, dozens more got it. And Pastor Ross said, I got church members sick everywhere. But then, because apparently he doesn't have any lawyer friends, he said, we knew what we were getting into. We knew the possibilities. So that means that Pastor Darrell Ross of the Warrior Creek Missionary Baptist Church, I think that would be your hard shell Baptist. I lose track sometimes. He announced that basically, well, he admits there, we knew what we were getting into. We knew the possibilities. What he's saying there is that he held his revival with malicious indifference to the well-being of his probably not particularly scientifically literate congregation. And he said, now we only got two people that's really sick. And ain't nobody been hospitalized. Let's not tell Brother Darrell, but the reason a whole bunch of them aren't hospitalized is because a whole bunch of them probably don't have any health care. Because remember, if Alabama would have let that one with his tan suit living in our White House force the decent people of Alabama to take his Kenyan Muslim usurper commie health care Medicaid expansion, well, Alabama wouldn't be a good God-fearing state no more. And then Brother Darrell went on to describe what it was like there in the Warrior Creek Missionary Baptist Church. He said they'd done some social distancing, and they had services not just once a night, but several times each day. They had some social distancing. But Brother Darrell said, we let everybody do what they felt like. That's damnedest thing for a Baptist minister to say, because most of his time gets spent telling people how not to do whatever it is they feel like. Well, okay. He's not talking about being gay or anything. That's for the youth minister, and that's on the DL. We let everybody do what they felt like. If you were comfortable shaking hands, you shook hands. If you didn't, you didn't. And ain't got but a couple of sick people. And, you know, I mean, if out of his more than 40 people, if a couple of them die, well, you know, Jesus just wanted it to happen. And if it hadn't been the Rona, Jesus might have made a satellite land on them, or an asteroid, or have them hit by a bus, or maybe white folks, it wouldn't be shot by a cop or anything.
Yeah.
Flavio says, the people weren't reviving from the revival. It's definitely not revivifying when you end up all dead. Well, that's true. But you're going straight to heaven. And this is just another gentle reminder that the biggest spreaders of the disease in this country are Christians. Good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians. And see, here's the thing. Other places where they aren't infested with evangelicals, the disease doesn't spread like this. They don't have an infestation of evangelicals in most of Western Europe. And so, for the most part, when Western European governments said, shut her down, they shut down. Hell, even the Pope at Rome said, nope, no Easter services here. And they figured that, well, they've been at this for 1,600 years or so. They could probably weather one Easter. Right. But not here. And you know, Bill Pepe the Frog Barr is a Roman Catholic. And he's not just a Roman Catholic. He's one of those weird Roman Catholics. Maybe Opus Dei. Who knows? But he was demanding churches reopen in churches that weren't even of his sect. Heretics. Maybe that's it. Maybe Bill Barr, acting at the behest of Donald Trump, was secretly trying to bump off some heretics. Wandering preachers in Catholicism, Steve tells us. In Catholicism, they're called missions. They don't typically last more than one day. It's a mass with a particular theme. There's no snake handling, strychnine swilling, or screaming and yelling. We don't do rolling on the floor either, just saying. Well, they do in some places, but, you know. Remember, in the developing world, as the late, great Bob Lotti used to remind us, too many people practice their Roman Catholicism with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other. Just saying. So, what it boils down to is Bill Pepe the Frog Barr, with his desperate attempt to force churches to reopen and the threats to sue states that kept them shut down, what he was doing was trying to kill people. This was not lost on Representative McCarthy Powell.
The facts. I'm going by the facts.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
And now the country, the United States of America, has more than 4.3 million COVID cases alone. You, Mr. Barr, and President Trump, working together, are letting my constituents down. And it's something that you are going to have to live with. What am I supposed to say to my constituents when they ask me if the government has done everything in its power to protect their loved ones from dying? You tell me, Mr. Barr, what am I supposed to tell them?
I would tell them that managing this kind of thing requires a lot of difficult choices and weighing different consequences.
I'm not going to lie.
I am going to tell them that President Donald Trump and the Attorney General
working together are not following health guidelines. They are letting Americans die needlessly because of political reasons. That is what I will tell them, Mr. Barr. Thank you. And one last question.
Did you notice the in our system part there? Like he was going to explain civics to somebody just off the boat? Yeah.
If I can.
In our system.
Under oath, do you commit to not releasing any report by Mr. Durham before the November election?
No.
You don't commit to that?
No.
So you won't go by Department of Justice policy that you won't interfere in any political investigations before the November election?
We're not going to interfere. In fact, I've made it clear I'm not going to tolerate it.
But under oath, you're saying that you do not commit to not releasing a report by Durham.
I'm not going to. Any report will be, in my judgment, not one that is covered by the policy and it would disrupt the election.
The time of the gentleman.
I've already made it clear that neither
you would go against your own Department of Justice policy, Mr. Barr.
Why don't you tell me what that policy is?
Oh, I have it right here.
Well, actually.
Ouch.
Do you want me to repeat it for you?
No, I know what the policy is.
The time of the gentlelady.
Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You. I yield back. Yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Who? As Darlene notes, it was hilarious near the end when Pepe wanted a five-minute break for what? And Jerry Bignad said no initially as they were almost done. But Jim Shorts Jordan, who gets pissy when a witness chooses to participate remotely in order to protect his newborn from COVID, lost his shorts about how mean Jerry was being. Then Pepe the Frog said he hadn't even had lunch yet, so Jerry Bignad gave in and gave Pepe his 5 minutes. Now I ask you, does Pepe look like the slightest bit emaciated for not having had lunch? No, fat boy's got plenty of meat on him to tide him over. Darlene, point of order. I don't think Pepe the Frog Barr's got a lot of meat on him. No, when he finally goes to his long home, he's going to sizzle down to just about nothing in hell, because most of that's just, well, fat. And as a guy carrying too much of it himself, I feel okay in pointing that out. Right. Anyone catch Representative Lasco claiming hordes of Antifa were going through Arizona, scaring the piss out of her people, ignoring the fact that Rona, is ripping through her state like beer enthusiasts at Oktoberfest? Yeah, I know. That's Megan. There were some real, genuine, I guess you'd say delightful moments. One of which, of course, was Jerry Nadler calling out the class clowns. That would be the mask hole COVIDiots, Jim Shorts Jordan, and Mike Johnson, or Pig Lickin' of Louisiana, and Andy Biggs, a maggot from Arizona. That's worth taking note of.
Of African Americans within the Department of Justice, how many you have in leadership ranks all the way down. Thank you, and I yield back.
The gentleman yields back. I would remind Mr. Jordan, Mr. Biggs, and Mr. Johnson to stop violating the rules of the committee, to stop violating the safety of the members of the committee, to stop holding themselves out as not caring by refusing to wear their masks.
Can we get the picture?
Is it permissible to drink a sip of coffee?
It is not permissible.
Not to drink.
We can't drink coffee in the room now.
Yeah, I don't think the problem's the coffee you're drinking there in the hearing room, which shouldn't be. The problem is the cheap stump liquor that they were drinking in the cloakroom before the hearing started. But he just gaveled the hell out of them. No, it's not permissible, you dicks. But pardon me. It's not that I live for the drama or anything. But doesn't the House have a sergeant at arms for a reason? Why fuck with these little turds? Why not just say the sergeant of arms is directed to remove these three members for failure to abide by the rules that this committee has adopted. And drag them out kicking and screaming if you have to. Let Jim Shorts put on some of those, demonstrate some of them wrestling skills for which he was made an assistant wrestling coach at The Ohio State University. Yeah, it would have been, it would have been splashed all over the internet, but still, I mean, to quote a little something from the sacred text of dudism, there are rules. This is not Vietnam. But that didn't happen. And I guess more's the pity of it. Steve in New York noting, Jim Shorts, was that his voice I heard in the background? Oh, yes, it was. He was babbling along the whole live long day. And we'll get back to other stuff from the hearing, without a doubt. We've crossed into the second hour of the program, and we do still have $60 of challenges on the table. It would be nice if they could be met, and we could take the fundraising down a considerable bit more. That'd knock us down $120. It's gratifying to know that we're finally done with last week. Steve in New York says, Sergeant-at-Arms, I'd like to see the Sergeant-at-Arms stand behind them until they put their masks on, and if they didn't, then haul them out. Fucking nihilists. Again, reference to the sacred religion of dudism. Fucking nihilists. Yeah, I want somebody to... I want to see somebody force Jim Shorts Jordan to wear a damn jacket. But no, he's... He's engaged in civil disobedience. He's protesting the women folk getting to wear pants and not having to wear jackets themselves. Because, you know, him too, I guess. Jack in Shreveport noting, the sergeant at arms, it's usually the Republicans that bring up civility, yet they're out of control, just a yelling and a screaming. Of course they are. And in the case of these mask-hole COVIDiots, spraying and spewing. Maybe they're actually hoping they'll get the Democrats sick. Possible? I'd say more than. Flavio pointing out, by now, Democrats should know repugnance do not operate in good faith. So when the repugnance showed a video without first sharing it with the Dems should have plastered the hearing with actual videos of actual fascist violence on the streets of Portland. Know what I mean? Plan like they're not going to operate in good faith. And this kind of brings us to this other story. Last night we talked toward the end of the program about the two mask-hole COVIDiots in Marshall, Minnesota, who showed up at Walmart wearing Nazi flags as masks and blathered and hooted and garped and yawped about how it's going to be Nazi Germany if we all have to wear masks. And then lo and behold, according to KARE Channel 11, a Minnesotan will have to help me here. Is it Wabasha County? Or is it Wabasha County? W-A-B-A-S-H-A? I'm guessing Wabasha, and that means I'm wrong. But the Republican Party of Minnesota's Wabasha County just couldn't help themselves, somebody there, and posted a historic image of what appears to be an SS officer speaking to a Jew wearing a yellow star that had been appliqued onto his coat, as the Nazis required. the meme they posted, the Republican Party of Wabasha County, Minnesota. I've already described the photograph. The text that went with the meme was, just put on the star and quit complaining. It's really not that hard. That was over top of the photo. Below it, it said, just put on the mask and stop complaining. Thank you, Flavio and Ralphs. Flavio says you had it right the first time. Wabasha. Just put on the star and quit complaining. It's not really that hard. Just put on the mask and stop complaining. Yeah. So, remember in Marshall, Minnesota, what the two COVIDiots said last night, or in the clip we had last night, was, if you elect Joe Biden, we're all going to be living in Nazi Germany. Because Joe Biden is such a well-known Nazi? Oh, God. Well, it didn't take long for this to get noticed. Jewish Community Action found it and tweeted, given that Minnesota rabbis recently spoke out in favor of a mask mandate, comparing that mandate to the Holocaust feels especially disgusting. We ask the Minnesota GOP to tell Wabasha Republicans to stop using imagery like this. It betrays a total lack of both empathy and education. It also displays the typical nature of who maggots are. Again, I remind us all of the words of Maya Angelou. When they tell you who they are, believe them. But no, immediately, or almost immediately upon Jewish Community Action's post, Minnesota maggot chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan ran to Twitter and said, this post was brought to Minnesota GOP's attention today. Immediately, we reached out to the Wabasha board. They believe it was a hack and are removing their Facebook page immediately. Our party does not support, condone divisive and harmful posts or language of this nature. Bullshit. There is an entire body of evidence from 2016 to the present that specifically disproves Jennifer Carnahan's claim. They've done nothing but support and condone divisive and harmful posts and language since the minute Donald Trump came down that filthy escalator. Oh, this is not who we are. Oh, yes, it is, Jen. It so is. But they're so, the maggots are so sold out, so thoroughly invested in the notion that they are the, and they are forever the abused, the oppressed, that even something as simple as wearing a mask is a mask too far. Yeah. And there's another thing that we've seen develop over the last few days, and that is what happens when somebody who has been happily maggoting along realizes that they're a potential target of COVID-19 too. that it's not just going to kill off those people that they don't like, that it's coming for them as well. There's even been reporting out of the White House that suggests that Donald Trump is only paying attention now, because prior to that, over the last months, he's been described as being completely done with COVID, not even remotely interested in it anymore. But then he started getting briefings explaining to him that it was burning so hot and so fast in maggot states and so-called swing states that it could have a significant impact on his re-election hopes. And then things changed. And so last week we had the story of Mrs. Shively in Oklahomistan. Yesterday evening, we had the story of Brother Womack in Colorado, who, and both of them suddenly realizing that, well, they could get it too. It could kill them. Welcome to reality, Tony Green. Tony Green wrote in something called the Dallas Voice, "I admit I voted for Donald Trump in 2016. I admit traveling deep into the conspiracy trap over COVID-19. All the defiant behavior of Trump's more radical and rowdy cult followers, I participated in it. I was a hard ass that stood up for my God-given rights." It's getting a little crowded on the road to Damascus, don't you think? "I believe the virus to be a hoax. I believe the mainstream media and the Democrats were using it to create panic, crash the economy, and destroy Trump's chances at re-election. And so, believing the pandemic to be a hoax, my partner and I hosted family members on Saturday, June 13th. On Sunday, June 14th, I woke up sick." Imagine gasping for air with every step you take. Imagine rubbing icy hot all over your head to soothe a painful headache. Imagine your eyes in a bowl of water while you're still seeing through them. Imagine collapsing and waking up in the ER only to find out COVID-19 attacked your central nervous system and the doctor just saved you from a stroke. "2 days later, my father-in-law's mother got sick. The new mommy and daddy got sick. We all tested positive for COVID-19. Only the newborn was spared. My father-in-law and I both went to the hospital on June 24. The virus had attacked my central nervous system and the staff stopped me from having a stroke." And then his father-in-law's mother, I guess that would make her his grandmother-in-law. Well, the next day, June 25th, she went to the hospital. And she never left. And on July the 1st, she died of pneumonia. And she died of pneumonia all alone, with her son, Green's father-in-law, sick in the room next door in the hospital. Tony Green went on and said, "On the day of her funeral, which was July 14th, 5 more of our family members tested positive for the virus. That evening, my father-in-law was put on a ventilator. You cannot imagine the guilt I feel. You cannot imagine my... And see, wait, let's take a look at that sentence. You cannot imagine the guilt I feel. Perhaps not, but on our side of the aisle, we will make the attempt. And we will sympathize. And we will empathize. And we take this virus seriously because of all the reality that is out there. And we can imagine the horror. We can put ourselves in Tony Green's shoes. And that is why we're careful. That's why we take this seriously. Because the idea of being horizontally crucified, face down with a garden hose down your throat and a machine doing your breathing for you, not being able to see, not being able to speak, being in a chemically induced coma, but at the same time hearing all the clicks and beeps and bings and pings and whirs around you, as occasionally human beings come in and talk about your status within your hearing. I mentioned that Harlan Ellison short story, "I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream." Tony Green, in what he wrote, said, "You cannot imagine the guilt I feel. You cannot imagine my guilt at having been a denier, carelessly shuffling through this pandemic, making fun of those wearing masks and social distancing. You cannot imagine my guilt at knowing that my actions convinced both our families it was safe when it wasn't." All he had to do was, as Sparky's Mask puts it, trust science and not idiots. And when he says, "You cannot imagine the guilt I feel," yeah, we can. The problem isn't us, though. The problem is him and them and those like-minded. Because like Ms. Shively, like Brother Womack, they couldn't imagine. They could not be bothered to care about the nameless, faceless tens of thousands of Americans dead from this pandemic that a toxic, poisonous, mentally addled, adipose wad of vanities and petty jealousies allowed to rip through our country. What we've learned over the last 3 years or so is that about a third of our country is fundamentally unable to think of anyone but themselves. Tony Green admits it. He told his family it was safe to have that big old family LARPing and smollicking and grabulating gathering, wheezing and spewing and coughing all over each other because of his investment in proving himself to be a good little maggot. He said, "I'm aware of how my bias could discredit me with some, but trust me, you do not want this virus. And you do not want your loved ones suffering and dying from this because you are taking a political stand or protecting the economy over their lives." Well, that almost sounds like a direct rebuke of Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor of Texas, who said that it was his mother-in-law and father-in-law's job and his father-in-law's mother's job to die for the economy. So because it finally came to his door, like Pharaoh with the angel of death of old, he finally learned. By the way, Tony Green was on record as referring to the COVID-19 virus as a scamdemic. Yeah. He said, for those who deny the virus exists or who downplay its severity, let me assure you, the coronavirus is very real and extremely dangerous. Before you even know you have it, you've passed it along to your friends, family, coworkers, and neighbors. And now husbands, wives, and children are being separated. The sick are taking care of the sick, while those without symptoms are self-quarantining. I'm aware of how my bias could discredit me. We read that part. We are all at the precipice of a common heartache. The next time you're put out because your favorite spots are closed or because they won't let you enter without wearing a mask and you decide to defy them rather than comply because you're defending your rights and freedoms from being trampled, just remember your family and friends may be next. And maybe because it finally touched him and his, maybe he's learning. Tony Green says, is that too harsh? Try imagining someone you care about on life support. So see, he's doing what we've been doing all along now. He's trying to think of someone beside himself. Try being one of those to pick the only 10 people allowed to attend a funeral for a loved one. But don't fret. You've got time to ponder. Because the mortuary is booked out for at least a week. Now imagine one more thing. That pool party, the mixer, or family reunion you're pushing for resulting in... that you're pushing for, resulting in you being cold and alone in a hospital bed, fighting for your life. Imagine the only human contact you feel is a stranger's rubber glove giving you medication, checking your vitals, and changing your diaper. That is exactly what has happened to our family. America, this is not going to go away without sacrifice. Either way, we're going to pay a price. Governments are faced with making difficult decisions, and they cannot appease and satisfy everyone. But to do nothing is to be foolish. To ignore or question the validity of this virus, its contagiousness, or the consequences of selfish attitudes is, bing, ding, he recognizes it, selfish attitudes, is at this stage completely stupid. I'm calling myself out first, but now this is personal. Now this is personal. And I fell on my sword. And I promise you, if we continue being more worried about the disruption to our lives than we are about stopping this virus, not one American will be spared. Not one. Now, that because they give you a little... because they give you a little bio at the bottom, consider this. This is what he does with his life. Tony Green is a consultant and cultural transformation coach to prisons and inmates in 4 states, a lobbyist for reform, and the author of Maxed Out, The Criminal Justice System Running Amok. Then how in the hell did he ever vote for Donald Trump? why, for such clever little primates as we are, why must some of us make it so hard? For the rest of us. I just had a note from our buddy Scary Jerry. Frank De Palma just died. Frank was my first wife's ex-husband. So by definition, Frank was a father to my children as well. Frank and I did not see eye to eye. If I scratched just beneath the surface, he's probably a Trumper. My kids texted me. No one should have died from this. My family is sad today. No point. No joke. No scary take. Goodbye, Frank. Pain is gone. Free yourself from this earthly bond and return home. Jesus. Sorry, Jerry. And so many other countries are getting this right. While we get it so horribly, horribly wrong. And in a time that is sadly wanting for answers, we are covered up in questions. And one of them is, did it have to be this way? And granted, it's the kind of conversation, the kind of thought experiment you engage in only if you have the luxury of the time for them. But realistically, would we be looking at 150,000 dead and 4 million plus infected if in 1787 some wealthy white men led by a guy named Alexander Hamilton hadn't argued that the people had no business electing a president directly, that we needed an institution that would make sure that people who owned other people exercised a disproportionate amount of power, political power, and thereby created the Electoral College. Would we be here, would we be living this reality right here, right now, if the Electoral College had not made Donald J. Trump president of the United States? The Lincoln Project seems to have answered that question with a resounding no. We would not be here. It would not be like this. A new ad. And it does sound very much like they recognize these never-Trump Republicans. They recognize the root cause of this godforsaken plague.
These are the memories COVID took from us. a child's birthday, time spent with friends, a first kiss, or the big day. A homecoming game on a cool fall evening, the first day of college, or a proud graduation. Dreams of starting a business and building a legacy, lifting our hearts in prayer and sharing our faith in God together. The blessing of a peaceful passing of an elderly parent surrounded by family. COVID has robbed America of so much. None of this had to happen. We have suffered needlessly because Trump is a fool, a liar, and a failure. Most countries stopped it. Trump refused. It's Trump's virus now, and before it's over, a million of us could die. What we've lost reminds us of the stakes this November. It truly is a choice, America or Trump. The Lincoln Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And the horn was in no wise compensated for running that ad. It is purely for, I guess we'd call it, journalistic purposes. It did not have to be this way, the ad declares. But what these never-Trump Republicans can't say is that if they themselves had not spent years hollering about that woman and butt her emails and Benghazi and Vince Foster and Monica Lewinsky, if they hadn't done everything in their power to make sure that Sandra Day O'Connor would join four judicial punks to install George W. Bush in the White House, this did not have to happen. But the bottom line is, if Hillary Clinton were president, this would not have happened. Because whatever else you say, she took facts and science seriously. God alone knows she was not nearly ideologically pure enough for any of us. But I'm damned if I can figure out a way to tell 150,000 families, 4 million families, that our ideological purity mattered more than their mother's life, or fathers, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, husband, wife, child. There's a learning, this plague presents a learning curve for all of us. Flavio reminding us that Herb Cain, his name's Herman, but remember, Godzilla from Wasilla referred to him as Herb. Herman Cain's on a ventilator. He's been in the hospital for over a month. And he had the best access to the best medical care available. One of the things coming out of all of this, and it will take years, but we're going to find out that the death toll is so much higher than what we think it is, wherever it ends up, because of the people who had no health care, who died alone at home, or entire families who got it and died because there was no way to get them health care. Bill Pepe the Frog Barr had the unmitigated gall to sit before the House committee, the judiciary, and declare that even though his lawyers are trying desperately to have the Supreme Court declare the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional, that he's not doing anything to take health care away from Americans. Damn. Just damn. Randy in PA pointing out, it's like George Carlin said, think of a person with an IQ of 100 and then think of the fact that half the people in the population are stupider than that. Yep. Steve in New York says, I can't tell you the guilt I feel. No schadenfreude here. However, I can't help but think of the teacher from Iowa the other night. If you already made that point, I'm sorry. I was away for a few minutes. Bob, what is it about the conservative mind that can't seem to muster empathy for anyone until they experience something? By the way, there have been plenty of times I can't imagine the sorrow a person may go through. For instance, when a parent loses a child, I can't imagine the sorrow and grief. However, that doesn't mean I won't try or at least show sympathy. If I can't show empathy because I just don't know their feelings and sorrow. But see, Steve, the most important part of all of that is your willingness to make the effort. The maggots, the COVIDiots, the mask holes are not even willing to make that effort. Jeremy in Vermont says, how about the children in cages? In excess of 5,000 to this day that may have or will have died of COVID. Bet we won't hear about the nameless or the homeless. Yeah. They will be the forgotten. And that's why people like our dear friend Jude travel to the border. Jude travels with the boots and flowers. And stands in silent witness. Refusing to forget the disappeared. Was it Sting? I think it was Sting. Who had a song on one of his albums dedicated to the mothers of the missing in places like Chile and Argentina. It was called, I believe, They Dance Alone. Yeah. And I don't have it immediately at hand. But there's going to be a lot of dancing alone. And what's going on with the fascist goons in places like Portland? Bring those horrors as people are snatched up off the streets at the behest of Bill Pepe the Frog Barr and the other vile fascists. Well, people being snatched up off the streets is exactly what happened in places like Argentina and Chile. Yeah, Megan tells me it's on Sting's Fields of Gold album. Yeah, thanks for the link, Ralphs. Why are these women here dancing alone? Why is there the sadness in their eyes? Yeah, that was that album came out, God, what, the beginning of this century? Before, perhaps? Yeah, before. How many of us thought that we would someday be referencing that song? As a reference to the United States of America. Well, I know this much. I know I was taught about fascism by people who fought against it. And I know people like Malloy have been warning about creeping fascism for 30-plus years. But far too many of us took to the notion that, well, it can't happen here. And look, it can happen here, because it damned well is happening here. What a day. It was in the House today. One of the more powerful moments came when a Louisiana Democrat, Representative Cedric Richmond, called out Bill Barr for the nasty racist that he is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Barr, you started your testimony with eloquent words about the life and legacy of John Lewis, fighting systematic racism, voter intimidation, civil rights. The one thing that you have in common with your two predecessors, both Attorney General Sessions and Attorney General Whitaker, is that when you all came here and brought your top staff, you brought no black people. That, sir, is systematic racism. That is exactly what John Lewis spent his life fighting. And so I would just suggest that actions speak louder than words, and you should keep the name of the Honorable John Lewis out of the Department of Justice's mouth. Let me also say, you mentioned bogus Russiagate. In your opinion, as the Attorney General of the United States of America, did Russia interfere or attempt to interfere in the 2016 election?
Yes.
In your position as the Attorney General of the United States, is Russia attempting to interfere in the 2020 presidential election?
I think we have to assume that they are.
Thank you, sir. Now, let's talk about the integrity of the election, which is also something Congressman Lewis fought for. Jared Kushner implied that the president could move the election day. Can a sitting U.S. president move an election day?
Actually, I haven't looked into that question.
Oh, no. I'll bet you haven't.
Well, 2 U.S. Code, Section 7 says federal election day is the Tuesday after the first Monday in November. So if you take that as a correct statute, is there any executive action by a president?
I've never been asked the question before. I've never looked into it.
Liar.
As Attorney General of the United States, do you believe that this 2020 presidential election will be rigged?
I have no reason to think it will be.
President Trump tweeted that the election will be rigged, but he also tweeted that when he was losing to Hillary Clinton, and he tweeted that a day after it was Fox showed that he was losing to Trump. But I don't want to be too political. Do you believe, as the Attorney General of the United States, that mail-in voting will lead to massive voter fraud?
I think there's a high risk that it will.
Do you ever vote by mail-in?
Now, art of word-knowing moment. Barr is a devil with language. Do you think there's a high risk of fraud with mail-in voting? Or do you believe, I think there will? He does not think that. He believes that. And if we do nothing else, we will be so much better off if we learn to spot the moments where people are using the word believe where they mean think, and the word think where they mean believe. And Bill Barr is a big believer. He believes things. And he believes because he does not support the fundamental idea of as many citizens voting as possible and making it simpler. He believes it is bad for his, well, no. He knows it's bad for his political party if lots of people get to vote who are entitled so to do. There is no data. There is no investigation. There is absolutely nothing that suggests that mail-in voting is rife with the potential for fraud. But he doesn't need data. There is, in fact, data directly contrary. The MIT study that was referenced earlier. The vote study at MIT, Steve wrote about a little bit ago, 143 cases of fraud using mailed ballots over the course of 20 years comes out to 7 to 8 cases per year nationally, all 50 states and territories. It also means that across 50 states, there's been an average of 3 cases per state over the 20-year span. That's just 1 case per state every 6 or 7 years. We're talking about an occurrence that translates to about 0.00006% of total votes cast. But let's hear Attorney General Pepe the Frog again.
President Trump tweeted that the election will be rigged, but he also tweeted that when he was losing to Hillary Clinton, and he tweeted that a day after it was Fox showed that he was losing to Trump. But I don't want to be too political. Do you believe, as the Attorney General of the United States, that mail-in voting will lead to massive voter fraud?
I think there's a high risk that it will.
Do you ever vote by mail-in ballot?
I think there's a high risk that it will. No. That's the whole point. He's in the believing business there.
Well, yeah, I did once, at least.
But you believe that other people voting by mail could lead to massive fraud?
No. What I've talked about, made very clear, is that I'm not talking about accommodations to people who have to be out of the state or have some particular need not to, inability to go and vote. What I'm talking about is the wholesale conversion of election to mail-in voting.
So that would be Oregon and California. By extension, Attorney General Pepe the Frog just alleged that every election held in Oregon and California is high risk. Do you think it is? If you vote in a place like Oregon or California, do you have some reason to think that your vote was never counted? Or maybe that someone voted in your stead? I dare say I'm not going to get emails saying, no, Bob, I'm pretty sure I keep voting by mail in California and Oregon, and I'm pretty sure they've never been counted.
You do understand that African Americans disproportionately do not survive COVID-19 coronavirus. You are aware of that.
I didn't hear the question.
You are aware that African Americans, black people, disproportionately die from COVID-19 coronavirus, correct?
Yes, I think that's right.
And not that it would be the first time that African Americans would risk their lives
to vote in this country to preserve its democracy. But the suggestion is that them having the ability to vote by mail would somehow lead to massive voter fraud. But I won't stick to that.
No, I didn't say that. I just state, I think, what is a reality, which is that if you have wholesale mail-in voting, it substantially increases the risk of fraud.
But it doesn't make it likely.
That's all I said.
Now, I also saw on TV that the president said he's not sure that he'll accept the election results. Can a president just protest because he lost an election?
Protest in what sense?
Well, can he contest an election just because he simply loses? Well,
Gore versus, you know, Bush v. Gore was...
Well, I think that was over a slim voter margin. I'm talking about if it...
And see there? One of the things that those five judicial punks who signed off on Bush v. Gore said was that that case was a one-off, and it was never to be cited, it was never to be referred to, it was never that they had done their dirty business and did not want the world to remember the dirty business that they did. Right there is the Attorney General of the United States citing Bush v. Gore.
Actually increases the risk of fraud.
But it doesn't make it likely.
That's all I said.
Now, I also saw on TV that the president said he's not sure that he'll accept the election results. Can a president just protest because he lost an election?
Protest in what sense?
Well, can he contest an election just because he simply loses? Well,
Gore versus, Bush v. Gore was...
Ah, you sack of shit! Which one of those was a sitting in, was an incumbent president protesting? He won't answer the question as it is put. Crooked little bastard.
Well, I think that was over a slim voter margin. I'm talking about if it is very clear that the president has lost an election, does he have a remedy to contest the election?
Not that I'm aware of.
Let me go back.
And see, understand, it is not the plan to lose the election. The plan, such as it is to not have an election to lose. Which is not voter fraud, but as Randy in PA points out, election fraud. Randy noting, yeah, there's not much voter fraud in mail-in voting, but there is massive election fraud as minority mail-in ballots are not sufficiently counted, according to Greg Palast. You yourself, referring to me, had difficulty navigating the ballot mail-in process. I absolutely didn't. I laid out the reasons it was difficult. Because it required me to sign an envelope across the seal that effectively made perjurers of everybody who signed those things. And of course, we have a Republican Secretary of State in West Virginia, so odds are it was dummied up. Notable widespread fraud from all mail-in voting in Utah. This comes from Steve in New York. Vote by mail. The 2020 June primary election is being conducted by mail. Due to election amendments made by the legislature because of COVID-19, there will not be in-person voting offered for the June primary election. Ballots will be mailed 3 weeks before election day to active voters who are eligible to participate in the primary election, the partisan primary, yada, yada, yada. And that comes from the Salt Lake County Clerk, Sherry Swenson. Jesus.
Back to what Representative Bass mentioned. You mentioned the number that there were 8 African Americans killed by the police and 11 white people killed by the police. If you use those numbers, that's 85% of that population is white, 15% of that population is black. But if you actually look at the deaths, according to the numbers you just gave, 42% of the deaths are African American, mm-hmm. and 58% are white. That is a glaring disparity in terms of population, and I just give you those numbers.
Well, not necessarily, because I have to adjust it by the race of the criminal perpetrator.
No, I just did that for you.
Race adjust by the race of the criminal perpetrator. What if the person killed wasn't a criminal? And what if the person has not been adjudged guilty of anything? Because that's what we're talking about. Summary execution by the police of people vaguely suspected of committing a crime. But Attorney Cleagle Barr can't see that.
And according to your numbers, African Americans are 4 or 5 times more likely than their percentage of the population to be killed by police than their white counterparts. I just wanted to give you that based on your numbers.
Actually, the studies I've seen have suggested two things. One, that in fact, police are less likely to shoot at a black suspect, a little bit more likely to shoot at white. However, that police are more inclined to use non-lethal force in a...
You mean like kneeling on somebody's neck, Bill? Non-lethal force, is that what you're talking about, buddy?
Contact with an African-American suspect. So those are in terms of the statistics, that's what it looks like to me.
Any data that you have that shows that African-Americans are less likely to die at the hands of police or be shot or shot at, to me, is a incorrect analysis. But I am interested in seeing it. So if you have it, please see it. I won't call it any names. But if that data exists, I would be more than happy to see it. And since you're sending me that data, can you send me the data of African-Americans within the Department of Justice, how many you have in leadership ranks all the way down? Thank you, and I yield back.
The gentleman yields back.
God. But the best part of that whole thing was you and the Department of Justice need to keep the Honorable John Lewis's name out of the Department of Justice's mouth. Absolutely. Like I said, what a day, what a day. Oh, I just realized, have we been blowing through the shit show for the last 2 days? Yeah, I guess there was a shit show today. And the little adipose wad of petty jealousies and vanity and anger and racism declared it his shit show this afternoon, talking about Dr. Fauci, who he spent the weekend sliming. He's got this high approval rating. Why don't I have a high approval rating? Nobody likes me. It could only be my personality. I don't know. You know, maybe it's that 4 million terrorized, terrified families. Maybe. Possibly. As Stephen New York notes, given that the U.S. is the vector in the world, God knows how many people in other countries we've infected. Then there are the excess deaths because of the overflowing of ERs and ICUs from COVID patients. Then there are the people who've lost jobs and families, who go homeless, who are evicted, who can't eat. Bob, I will bet that right now, while 150,000 deaths from COVID, I'll guarantee there are that many or more that are COVID-related. Sure. And remember that one of the most revolting paranoid talking points of the maggots is that Well, they're just calling everything COVID because they're getting paid. The hospitals and the doctors are getting paid to call things COVID. It ain't that bad. They are a sorry, miserable, hateful lot. And by the way, add this to the list of coulda, shoulda, woulda. Turns out that, and this is from reporting by Matthew Mosk, Caitlin Fulmer, and Josh Margolin of ABC News. Way back in January, there was an email chain among medical and security experts who were called the Red Dawn Team. And they were doing all they could to send up, you know, send up the signal flares and crank the air raid sirens, get anybody to listen. ABC News got hold of the email chain. The subject line of the email was Red Dawn Rising. Once again, the horn, living in the future. You know, for years, whenever we did a Freedom Protector story, we had there was a cry, Wolverines! And that, of course, came from the horrible, horrible, terrible, really bad, awful 1984 movie based on the American taste for paranoid and commie invasion conspiracy theories during the reign of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. It was called Red Dawn. And so they named, you know, their group Red Dawn because, well, invasion of the commies. And Red Dawn, I think, features, what, North Koreans and Cubans? Maybe? Been a while. Dr. Jeffrey Duchin from Seattle and King County, Washington, was part of that email chain, interviewed by ABC News. Dr. Duchin said, we did not step up and meet the challenge that we needed to meet. We didn't act quickly enough to do the things that we needed to do early enough, and we still are not doing the things we needed to do to get this outbreak under control. He's not talking about his working group. He's talking about the United States and the Trump administration. Six members of the team, Dr. David Markazi, one of them from the University of Maryland Medical School, spoke to ABC News. Dr. Markazi said, we were generally concerned that this was going to be a threat to our nation. Dr. Dan Hanfling, biosecurity and disaster response expert, said, the president began to say in March that nobody could imagine that something like this could actually occur. The truth is that there was a group of us that had been trying to raise the alarm. They talked about things like asymptomatic spread. In the email chain, Eva Lee from Georgia Tech noted that a 20-year-old asymptomatic woman in Wuhan had managed to infect five members of her family with COVID-19. She was responded to by Dr. Robert Cadleck, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response for the MAGIT regime. He saw that email and said, Eva, is this true? If so, we have a huge hole on our screening and quarantine effort. And so by February, members of the Red Dawn chain were solidifying their view that what started as a mystery illness, this from the ABC News reporting, in China was poised to become an epidemic of historic proportions. some of us were aware of some of this. And if the chain gets moving in January, once again, you've got to push back into December, and all of a sudden, we're back at November the 16th, and Donald Trump's mysterious trip to Walter Reed Hospital. Because that's about the time when the Pentagon and the White House, but hey, not the Congress, were warned that it was out of control in China. And then the stories of it turning up in places like Italy and Spain. Last year, way last year, March of last year, we may someday find out that it did not originate in China, let alone in a bioweapons lab in China, but that it got out of hand there. But if we had a functioning constitutional government, you would take information like this and you would impeach Donald Trump again for it. And it would be absolutely indefensible. And so here we are into the third hour of the program. There is still a $60 challenge on the table. And otherwise, it's unresponded to. And remember, there's a jar of bacon jam for anyone responding to $10 of that challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York. Alma, with the $50 challenge for in honor of the griddling of Pepe the Frog today. So it would be wonderful if we could not go into midweek. The cathedral's still closed, and the deacons are practically immobile at this point. But there's $60 worth of challenges out there, and after that, well, there's still a long way to go. Let's go over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, how are you doing today?
A little rainy today, so I wasn't able to get out and play in the yard quite as much as ordinarily, but it's only 80 degrees in the studio, so it's not sweltering. It's not tropical yet.
Mm-hmm. You get the nice moist smell from the mountains.
Oh, it's lovely. And since there was a little bit of thunder along the way, that clean, tangy, sort of metallic ozone smell.
Yep. That's always nice. Wow. Well, I got lucky today. This was one of my days off. Now, that hearing was better than a movie. God almighty.
And I hate to be so jaded and cynical, Todd, but it was some fine entertainment. Because the bottom line is, the Constitution is in such a shambles. I'm at pains to figure out how we do anything about this. Coming out of this, might one dare hope that there will be a bill of impeachment against Attorney General Pepe the Frog?
I heard you say that, and I was on the same page. I don't know if you saw the text I sent, but yes. You're a lawyer, but I got the feeling that the folks, the questioners who were really with it, they were laying out a case, as far as I'm concerned. But there's so much. And I'll let you get a few minutes ago. This attorney general is just disappointing at every single turn. I didn't expect much anyway. That's why I was talking trash about him when he was confirmed, because we know his history, but apparently the for-profit media didn't want to bring it up, you know. But that's water under the bridge now. But your point about, I cannot believe that attorney general, this attorney general, would use such an undeveloped argument as to compare private citizens and gunplay versus law enforcement.
There would seem to be a significant difference, wouldn't there?
Well, exactly. And he should know better. He is the top lawyer in the country. He should not. That's a very elementary argument. Red herring, and it's just not based. It's not logical. Okay, private citizens do not have the power to arrest, incarcerate, and literally kill someone on the spot and be exonerated. That's just not the way our system works. So to use, and I would encourage everyone who has maggots in their family or circle or knows anyone, don't allow that argument to be used. You know, let people say their piece, but then explain that. Ask, you know, pedagogy, you know, well, what do you think the difference is between someone on the street and a law enforcement officer when it comes to deadly force? Well, what is the difference? Make them answer the question. And maybe they'll make the connection. Because that's just a terrible, that's like comparing a car, when people would compare car deaths with COVID, you know, and they just don't get it.
Well, that happened today, too.
They're still saying that. Oh, please stop.
Allison Camerota at CNN did another check-in with her panel of precious Trump voters. There's six of them. And now three of them say, no way I'm voting for him again. But one of them, and she showed up for the Zoom panel, making sure that she had her Trump flag behind her. And she started talking about how, we had lots of car wrecks and we didn't shut the highways down. And I can't wear a mask because I have a breathing problem. And one of the Road to Damascus Trumpers, I guess that's what we're going to call them now, or what I'm going to call them, said, really? Well, if you're in my grocery store and you won't put on a mask, then yes, you're an idiot. Because you know what? I can't catch a car wreck from some asshole who won't wear a mask.
Yep.
Or maybe he said, I can't catch a heart attack or something, but the point was made. And she was, I do too have a breathing problem. Then stay home, Karen.
Right. Exactly. You know, I have to say, I've seen a definite positive correlation from when the president finally came out and said people should be wearing masks and the number of people who are in compliance without being asked around here. You know, which is pretty sad. That's a sad commentary.
I mean, it's making a positive difference.
Because they follow everything he says. That's what I mean. Just like the people who were drinking bleach and injecting disinfectants. You know, you had what 30 some odd members.
Gosh, it's almost like you're it's almost like you're describing members of a cult.
It behaves that way. This organism known as the maggots. Yes. It is. It's idolatry. They want to believe in that so much. And remember, all this shit we're dealing with, I can render this down as long as it ain't no woman and it ain't no Negro. Why would we put up with this?
Okay, I'll take the bait. How do we not put up with this?
Well, we have to identify the rest of these problems first. This attorney general really made me feel uneasy when today I don't know who the representative was. I don't remember now, but it'll come back up. But he intimated, well, we're still doing investigations, and don't worry, we're not done yet. Intimating he's going to use his powers, his levers of power, which are very wide and deep. See, they're not above getting people's emails, blackmailing people. They're not above that at all. At all. And Ratcliffe is now head of the DNA, I believe, right? Not DIA, what is it?
DIA?
DIA, right. The coordinator of all our intelligence. Yes, and he's a...
He's DNI.
DNI, Director of National... Right. Right, with no experience, just like a lot of these.
Well, you know, keeping up with these incompetent maggots. You know, the struggle is real.
So, you know, he really has showed what he is today. And the hubris, he was just dripping with so much hubris that it was a pool of just pus around his body at that seat. I mean, he actually, first of all, I don't know, when I was younger and I used to watch these hearings, yes or no meant yes or no. The question is yes or no. We don't need you to diatribe every damn answer. Those are the rules.
Right, but he's in there to kill the clock.
And he did a good job of it, and I wish more of the questioners would reclaim their time instead of being so nice. Some of them did, some of them didn't.
Well, you know, we call what I do most nights for the first part of the program the filibobster. I saw it referred to. I saw what he got, what Pepe the Frog did earlier today, referred to as a filibarster.
That was good. That's cowbell worthy.
Or a filibilster.
Wow. See that? Double fit. It's true. It's true.
But I want to go back to one thing when he was being grilled by, I think, Representative McCarthy Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And he defended his use of the little green goons and what he did in Lafayette Square.
Well, I was defending a federal installation.
And he was trying to say that somehow or another, that's why he didn't happen to notice the Ted Nugent cosplay convention wannabes with all their damn guns overrunning the Michigan State House.
You know, because that's only a state building.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
But something occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in courthouses around West Virginia, I don't know about anywhere else, but it's a state facility, or a courthouse is a county facility, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got your county clerk, you got your circuit clerk, your circuit judge, your family law master, your county prosecutor, what have you, county record room with the deed books and all of that shit, and your county sheriff. And but a lot of these courthouses will have an office for the local representative of the State Department of Veterans Affairs. And that is clearly a state office within a county building.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you want to bet? And you know, we've got members of the community up in Michigan. What do you want to bet that somewhere in the Capitol complex of the state of Michigan, what do you want to bet there's a federal office in one of those buildings?
Would have
some some federal liaison,
right.
You know, maybe yeah. the Michigan office of federal chief cook and bottle washer. I care not, but if there is so much as 1 square inch of federal office anywhere in the Michigan State Capitol, then yes, Bill Barr, according to his own reasoning, could have used that space as a reason to go in and clear out all those refugees from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention with their goddamn guns.
No, he wasn't interested at all in that.
Because white!
That's a state issue. He was upset.
Because white.
You know, because these people are sharper than he is in some ways. You know, he thinks he's got everything sewn up, but not really. Not really. Once again, his hubris has taken over. And I don't think he likes women.
Oh, no. All of these maggots become entirely different people when they are addressing an uppity person of color, an uppity woman, or worst of all, an uppity woman of color.
That's what I've seen. And speaking of uppity women of color, you know, I'll never forget the way Kamala Harris dismembered him last time during his confirmation. And you know, because he's an unconvicted perjurer. He just hadn't been convicted of it yet.
needs to be charged. But, oh, by the way, you got a cowbell. You got a cowbell from Jeremy in Vermont. A pool of pus. There goes Billable Rick's late lunch and dinner in the Mountain Time Zone.
Well, it's true. You look at him. He looks like if he doesn't get his 3 pounds of prime rib every night, he looks like he's going to go into shock.
That's two.
I mean, look, he's just reprehensible.
Well, yeah, he is, but we do a disservice because we got to kind of remind people of this every so often. He's not doing this because Trump. Once again, he's doing this because Republican. Because he's the one who proudly convinced George H.W. Bush to pardon all of the Iran-Contra criminals. All of them.
That's what I was talking about.
He said, if you're going to pardon one, you got to pardon them all.
The whole lot of them. Ali North, the whole crooked bunch.
Cap Weinberger.
Man, this is what I'm saying. We're of the age. That was a bit, man, that Iran-Contra thing, just, it was a big, we kept telling them, no, this is wrong. You know, Danny Ortega's right. Leave him alone. No, Reagan had to do what the hell he wanted. Then he had to overthrow Grenada just because. You know, that doesn't get talked about enough. That should have disqualified him from the beginning. You know.
You're talking about Barr doesn't like women. Mike in Cascadia was quick on the draw with this. Another from the great Pat Bagley, editorial cartoonist at the Salt Lake Tribune. And I know I'm describing a visual on the radio and all that goes with it, but it's a picture, it's a drawing, a caricature of Barr sitting at a table, pouring from a bottle into a glass, the bottle labeled Trumpism. There are empty liquor bottles simply with a simply orange and an orange T on it. And he's wearing, and you know, you can see the Bagley's done such a magnificent job. You know, you can see the outline of his man boobs. And he's wearing a men's tank T-shirt, sitting at the kitchen table. There's an old open grate gas space heater over against the wall. The sink's full of empty liquor bottles. And huddled over against the wall is Lady Justice, with her blindfold pulled up above one eye, and it's been blacked. And her scales are laying shattered on the floor between Bill Barr and her.
Oh, I got to pull that up.
That's Jesus, crazy. That's powerful.
Can you see like the nasty hair on his chest and the fat rolling over on his tank top?
Oh, no, there's definitely the fat rolls are definitely there. no allusion to like, you know, curly gray chest hair or anything, but he's just kind of a. It's from a perspective above, looking down and taking in the whole scene, and he's just sort of this hateful amphibian looking frog in a chair, just sort of Jabba the Hutt like in a chair.
Oh, that's perfect.
Did I ever tell you that once upon a time I had a job? Once upon a time I had a job, Todd.
That's what it sounded like.
It was very brief because I got hired at CNN. But I had a job.
Blue Pen Bob. Did they used to call you that?
I had this job where I would go in. It was a radio job. And on Sunday mornings, I would read the Sunday funnies. You know, the color funnies. Sunday paper. I'd read the Sunday funnies out of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and describe them frame by frame for the visually impaired.
Oh, my God.
But I got to do my fun voices and everything. Snuffy Smith was always I was very good at Snuffy Smith.
That sounds kind of fun, actually.
Laws of mercy, Granny.
Snuffy, where are you at? I'm taking a nap, Ma. Oh boy. I could have fun with that. Wow. Blue Pen Bob. You know what it's like when you edit someone's stuff and they get a little attitude and it's like, well, look, I didn't write it. You wrote it. You know what I mean?
I do.
You know, everyone can't write, and it's a shame, but it's just, you know. I'm not going to get into that. Okay. So what else stuck out to you from this hearing?
It was just, for me, look, like I said, I kept, you know how as the clock ticks down in a football game, and you're sitting there and your team's down and you're just trying to come up with possible solutions that can get you those 27 points you need for the big comeback in the last 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like lately when South Carolina plays Clemson. Yeah. Sorry, David and South Carolina, Stan. I was sitting there just waiting, watching. See something move in the background? You're like, could that be the sergeant at arms? Is somebody going to come and put Jim Shorts Jordan in a straight jacket? Because that's the real jacket I'd like to see Jim Shorts Jordan in.
He's out of order. He is so out of order. What is wrong with him? He's regressing. He must think he's still in high school.
He's a punk.
Can he moderate his voice? He's always aggrieved. Everything, this can't. It's like, calm down, man. Calm down. Put a jacket on.
You never met right. that. Have you never? Wait. Have you never met that dude in a bar?
Yeah, we all know that guy. Yep. Real intense. Wrong. You know, intense about being wrong about shit. Yeah, you know, and again, like an ex-jock, right? But this attorney general, it's led to a lot of bad things that are going on right now that I don't know that can be picked.
Well, is he Biff from Back to the Future Part which? Two? Three?
Was it two? I think, was it two?
I don't know. It's the one. I mean, you know, Biff was an asshole bully, but there's one of them. Spoiler, you know, where he winds up being the guy who washes the car.
That is true. Right. Comes back and has a crappy job washing the car. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Those charges are going to catch up with him at some point because it's just too much, you know, with his quote-unquote looking the other way while boys are being abused. People, I should say. Oh, and speaking of gender, that you know, I pay attention when people start to talk about stats. And, you know, that was when they talked about, well, from Barr's late last night, he submitted around 10-something, submitted his opening statement last night. And then he wanted to make this comparison. Well, there are eight black males killed compared to 11 white males. You know, why are you focusing on males? How about, you know, that discounts a whole lot of dead people?
Well, because the last thing he wanted to get into was some Sandra Bland talk and especially some Breonna Taylor talk.
Well, that's what I'm, man, come on. That is unacceptable. Breonna Taylor, all of it is unacceptable, but there's no way around that. You know, there's no way around it. And how come, I want to know how come the interrogators didn't bring up, I mean, I can make a good argument. Okay, so you claim, Mr. Attorney General, that there's no institutional racism and you know, law enforcement is free of this. Then how do you explain all these racist Facebook posts right after Ferguson and continuing on, and we can draw the line between white supremacists and neo-Nazis and law enforcement, you know, and this is not new. Look in the South, look how many, and even in, you know, Easter Blip up north, you always had law enforcement involved in the Klan. Well, because they were slave catchers. You know, that's just history. So I don't think that argument holds any water. And even when you have black cops, you know, they want to fit in. So it's about,
well, but remember, when you said it's just history, Tom Head Full of Cotton from Arkansas would say that's radical leftist crap. That history stuff.
Well, he's a dumbass. he's just a dumbass. He is a dumbass. You know, he's just ridiculous. Every time he opens his mouth, he makes himself look silly. And he thinks he's so erudite and smart. And I'm like, you're really not that bright. You know, you need to shut the fuck up. So, you know, you served in the army or whatever you did, and that's great. You know, but stop trying to act like you can construct policy. He's fucking stupid. And talking about rewriting history with 1619. What the fuck? Revisionist history, death projection again.
Well, what are we to take from it? Was he some sort of affirmative action admit at Harvard? You know, the every now and then they let in some poor, stupid white guy?
From a poor state, man, we'll have to let you in. Arkansas, oh, yeah. You people pick cotton, man. You were a white sharecropper. Yeah, we feel sorry for you. I don't know what his background is, but he makes the wrong arguments for his cases. I just don't understand it. His reasoning is not sound. He can't possibly believe that shit he says. Or can he?
Sure he can.
Because
racism rots your brain. It can take somebody who is the veritable salt of the earth, finest human being you'd ever want to know in your life, and turn him into what in the hell? Because it defines you.
You know,
eventually it defines you.
It's almost like a club, isn't it? Like a frat.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, it feels more subcellular to me.
You know, it's something I've been thinking about because things are so segregated now, like they were before the 60s, I guess. And I think a lot of, I'm not trying to make this a black-white thing, but I'm just trying to explain something. A lot of white folks, I think, you know, they know people in their family or in their circle who are racist, but they don't want to admit it. And what they forget is that a lot of people from different cultures, you know, we have friends and we have family members who are of a different ethnicity. So we know what goes on. So when you know, people try to say, oh, there's no racism, or I never heard that, you know, who are you talking to? You just look stupid. You know, just because you roll like that, you don't have any friends that look differently from you, doesn't mean everyone is like that. I don't mean you know.
No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of white supremacy, though, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Our buddy John in PA hit me to this earlier on Twitter. You remember way back when the marches had started in Minneapolis, and there was that video of the guy with the black umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
White guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was walking
smashing
by the
windows and goading people.
Walking by the auto zone and just bashing the windows in with a hammer.
Yep.
And I said, you know,
he must have one of those escape hammers. Mm-hmm.
I said, what? And at the time, I remember saying, you know, that ain't Antifa. That's not an anarchist. That's not even anybody who remotely gives a fuck about George Floyd. Well, we finally know who it is.
Oh, good. Who is it?
His name has not been released. And if anybody says his last name is Barr, they're a damn liar. But no, he's been identified by, according to reporting in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Apparently they or law enforcement or both know who he is, but he's 32 years old. He is a known white supremacist.
Mm-hmm.
He has not yet been charged, but apparently the charging documents are coming. And among other things, he is associated and or affiliated with a pair of biker gangs, the Aryan Cowboys and the Hells Angels. And that AutoZone that he bashed, Erica Christensen, a police arson investigator, said in a search warrant affidavit that was filed this week, "This was the first fire that set off a string of fires and looting throughout the precinct and the rest of the city. Until the actions of the person your affiant has been calling Umbrella Man, the protests have been relatively peaceful. The actions of this person created an atmosphere of hostility and tension. Your affiant believes that this individual's sole aim was to incite violence." And if you recall back then, people were immediately, you know, the reporters went over to the AutoZone, whatever, and there were a couple of young black dudes who walked up and said, "This ain't right. This is not Black Lives Matter. This is nothing we're doing. We ain't looting."
I remember that.
And then, yep. If you recall, there's other video of people walking around the corner of the building going, "Why'd you do that, man? What are you doing?
Right.
Who the hell are you?"
And he just kept walking. Yep. And he just kept walking like nobody was even saying anything to him. He doubled up the gate. Yep. It stuck out. But you see, they don't want to. Well, at least where I live, they really, people around here really think all the trouble is being caused by black people and they just need to go home and shut up and get a job.
Among other things, this was 2 days after the murder of George Floyd, okay? So the wound was fresh and raw. And he smashes the windows, and then he spray paints "Free Shit for Everyone Zone" on the glass front doors of the building.
I missed that.
And then he was connected to something that happened in Stillwater, Minnesota, where white supremacists went after a Muslim woman and her 4-year-old daughter at a restaurant. And the men in that altercation were wearing vests with the insignia of the Aryan Cowboys, the Hells Angels, and the Outlaw Motorcycle Gang. And so, what we were saying then proves to be true now. And among other things, there are reports out of Richmond. The mayor of Richmond, leave the mayor out of it. But the bottom line is, I forget if it was Proud Boys or Boogaloo Boys or Neo-Nazis or, you know, the Three Percenters or which, but it was right-wing white supremacists who were bragging about having gotten the violence and the looting and the destruction of property going in Richmond.
And that perspective never really grew any legs. It never got the media legs that it deserved.
No. And now the little green goons are claiming to have found bags of random magazines for firearms in Portland. Oh, yeah, we found these laying. They were getting ready to. Those Antifa were getting ready to. Bullshit.
Well, that goes hand in hand with these reports, and it happened here. You had unidentified people going around and handing out bricks and leaving piles of bricks for folks to use if they wanted to. And nobody knew who they were. Nobody recognized. They didn't know where they were from.
Now, some of that may be spurious. Because, in fact, Brother Deacon Asa and I were talking about it. That may have been deliberately generated disinformation. And apparently, the story of the piles of bricks did not withstand scrutiny.
Well, the chief of police here swears that was happening here, which I don't want to say I don't trust him, but he doesn't know as much about the community as he thinks he does. But this whole thing is not as cut and dry as people would like to think. We know that the regular protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, have been infiltrated. It happens all the time. If you've ever been to a protest, there's always just groups there. But some people like...
Oh, God, no. Really, I mean, you don't have to convince me. I got stories.
I bet you do. You know.
I mean, Coal River Mountain Watch was actually infiltrated with... were actually infiltrated by paid assholes from the United Mine Workers.
Provocateurs, huh?
Yeah. Sure.
See, that's messed up. And you know, sometimes they're government agents and sometimes they're just assholes. You know, I've been to a couple protests. There's always, it's just weird stuff that goes on, especially in the periphery. You see the FBI's out taking pictures, even for union protests. They love to take pictures of the union people. Well, you already know that.
Well, yeah, but in this case, I mean, I know some people may take issue with me, you know, speaking ill of the United Mine Workers, but, you know, hell, they are not who they once were. I mean, we're talking about a union that couldn't even bring itself to endorse the re-election of Barack Obama. You know, because, you know, tan suit, black guy, White House.
Yeah, it was a wardrobe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a wardrobe malfunction. That's what that was.
Yeah. That's what it was. Did you hear the bad news about the U.S. Postal Service?
I didn't know there was any good to compare it to. No offense, but
well, okay. So I work for you could say it's government. So we're supposed to get mail every day at work, and mail hadn't been coming now for a few months. It just doesn't come every day, and I found that to be odd. So I started to graph it out, at, you know, at work just because I like it so, and you know, whatever. So then I'm seeing this pattern, and I mention it to the director and my coworkers, and like, yeah, I noticed that too. There's no mail. I'm like, yeah, it only comes like every third day. So what has happened is that they're doing away, they're cutting back on overtime. And look what's coming now. And look what has come. Remember, we just had a mail-in election.
Oh, yeah, the little lick spittle that has been put in charge of the the Postal Service is, you know, has tried to implement a plan to slow the mail, and that OT the OT aspect is part of it. I do want you remind me of something though. I want to make sure and suggest.
Yeah, Bob, stop telling us to listen to Dr. Bill.
Well, you want the Dr. Bill podcast today? It's only an hour. The cable company was coming this afternoon, and they said, "Oh, we'll be there between 2 and 5." I'll have to check in with Dr. Bill to find out what time after 5 they showed up. But he didn't, you know, Bill's conscientious, so he didn't want to be in the middle of the program and have them pecking on the door.
Right.
So he knocked off at 2. Mm-hmm. And he did a masterclass today deconstructing Mike Pompeo. graduated first in his class at West Point, yeah.
Oh, God.
But Mike Pompeo tried to rewrite the Declaration of Independence, and Dr. Bill wasn't having none of it. And in fact, he talked about some of the Postal Service issues, and one of the things, because I sit listening to Dr. Bill, and he's genial and generous, and you know, Bob, anytime you want to chime in, but I get 3 hours. I don't want to walk on his two. But recall that once upon a time, the head of the Postal Service, the Postmaster General, once upon a time, were one of the single most important members of the cabinet. Because the nation's ability to communicate among the several states and get the mails through was one of the most important functions of government.
We had to get the news out. There were millions of newspapers that they had to get sent.
Well, we de-emphasized the Postmaster General.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's time we re-emphasized it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you shouldn't be able to just put some little punk-ass lick spittle in the role of the Postmaster General and the Senate, the Congress, not have any say-so over it.
See, this is a good topic, Bob. This is worthy of like a Friday night or just a whole program, because if you think about it, that deals with free speech. It's a cabinet position. And it's really integral. In other words, it's in the Constitution. This is why I cringe. It's bad enough that we have privatized prisons, but the post office is in anything in the Constitution that we have to have. They cannot privatize that. That's just bullshit. People are in business to make money. They will cut corners to make money and let the courts figure it out later. That's the way capitalism works. At least that's my argument. You see where I'm coming from with this?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, we will add it to the list of things that have to, like I said the other night, this is the work of generations. And fixing the post office should be way the hell up on the list.
They've been knocking them ever since they were mandated to save for retirement for people they haven't even hired yet. I mean,
for people that haven't been born yet.
For people that weren't. Okay.
Yeah.
The fact that was passed is just disgusting.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, Republicans destroying things as they almost always do. Let me let you know. You got a big howdy by email from Jude. Jude thinks the world of you and the ideas you bring to the table. Jimmy just noted, I like Dr. Bill. I do too. And I think Dr. Bill may spend some part of tomorrow going after Tom Cotton.
I hope he does.
Because if anybody can deconstruct some right-wing asshole declaring historical revisionism, Dr. Bill's the one to do it. I had a note from Cynthia. Bob, a few minutes back, you were talking about a maggot who said she couldn't wear a mask because she had a breathing problem. Maybe she should try catching the virus and end up hospitalized and intubated. I recently saw a video of a nurse talking about patients who are intubated. They have to handcuff the patient's hands to the bed so they can't rip the tube out. And as a result, the patient gets horrible bed sores because they can't be turned because they're handcuffed. Imagine laying in bed in the same position for weeks or however long they're intubated, and meanwhile they have this tube down their throat into their lungs, and they're drowning in the gunk in their lungs. Going through that seems like torture to me. You know, wearing a mask to prevent someone from going through that seems like a small price to pay, a tiny inconvenience in comparison to being intubated. But, Cynthia says, that's just me. But it's not just you, Cynthia. It's anybody who bothers to ponder any of this. Agnes and I were talking, and I was like, I don't know. It gets that close. I'm going to see if maybe we can't work out, and I'll check out on my own terms.
Isn't that why when this first started with the special machines that were required in New York, you know, it became clear, you know, they came out with the stats. You know, once you get intubated, you at first they didn't have to give you drugs so that you don't, like, you know, so you can't manipulate yourself.
Yeah, they induce a coma. That's why I refer to it as horizontal crucifixion, face down. Because apparently the ventilator works better if you're face down.
It's no way to live. And when you walk into the ICU, my mother was on one when she got the flu really bad, and she actually was gone, and they revived her, and they had her on propofol, and I was like, I came into the hospital, I couldn't believe it. And when you just totally into, they're out of it, and they may never be the same. You lose a lot of brain cells with all those heavy drugs and lack of oxygen. It's not a good thing. It's, you know, I tell you, between you and your listeners, this is a lot going on, man. This program is really something.
Blame it on the events of the day. James in Illinois said, Todd's okay. Don't want him to get the big head. So don't get the big head, Todd.
I'm not getting the big head. No. I'm always listening. And matter of fact, last time we talked, I was stuck on Mr. Hand, but I was trying to remember you were talking about books and literature that the South didn't want imported. And I was
It wasn't just the South. That was introduced by, I asked Dr. Bill about that today, too. It was introduced by the president of the United States Senate. The legislation banning the importation of all books from Europe was introduced by the president of the United States Senate, President Pro Tem, I guess, in 1815, and among other, and one of the few people to speak out against it, Thomas Jefferson, who had spent just about every damn dime he had on either French wine or European books, about had a conniption.
Well, sure.
And remember, the books that Thomas Jefferson had collected in the course of his life became the origin of the Library of Congress.
That's a good piece of information.
And, hey, let's take a minute here. I'm told we have a first-time caller, and I want to make some time to make sure we get him on. Hey, Jay.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good, good. How about you?
Good, good. Hey, I'm calling from Spokane, Washington. So I'm about 360 miles to the east of Portland. And had relatives there at some point in my life, but I'm older now. And I just had this thought for the city of Portland in a reaction to the federal stormtroopers. The city of Portland owns the public utility, that is to say, the public owns the public utility that supplies water, sewer, garbage, electricity, natural gas to most residents and businesses in the city limits. Now, I presume the federal courthouse, where the federal stormtroopers are headquartered, are in the city of Portland, within the city limits. So if I'm mayor of the city of Portland, and I go over and I call up the head of the public utility and I say, I want you to cut off all services to the federal courthouse starting at 6 p.m., starting such and such a day. All of a sudden, all those folks, all them stormtroopers, don't have any power, don't have any water. They probably can't stop the sewer, but, you know, that makes things a little bit more uncomfortable for them.
It's interesting you would bring that up, because that is, in instances where you've got terrorism situations or hostage crises, it's one of the first things law enforcement always do. They cut off the power to the compound. The problem with this scenario, though, is that there is everyday business going on. But somebody has jurisdiction. Somebody's got day-to-day jurisdiction over the maintenance of that courthouse. I would imagine it's probably, I don't know, the senior U.S. district judge or somebody like that. But he or she has some sort of a a subordinate, a clerk, or an administrator, whatever, who manages the day-to-day and literally pays the bills?
Probably somebody from the GSA or its equivalent.
So it would be interesting if the mayor of Portland and, say, the governor of Oregon would go to whoever that person is and say, look, we don't want to do this, but, you know, you've got a building full of terrorists. And we got to smoke them out.
And if I were you, saying, going to the judge, maybe you should render a decision that says, okay, we're not going to do this shit anymore. I mean, we're not going to do this stuff anymore.
No, you can say shit on the air.
You know?
You can say that on the air here.
Oh, okay.
And that too is a good point because, where was I going with this? Yeah, lost my train of thought. Happens these days.
Hey, may I ask one question?
Sure.
May I ask one question? Never hear from angry anymore. The angry Indian?
Yeah, yeah. Haven't heard from him in ages.
Wonder if he's, like, okay.
I certainly hope so.
Me too. He always has good points, or always did.
And by the way, you've got you got an answer to your question, courtesy of Billable Rick. Because remember, Billable Rick was an assistant U.S. attorney at one point. The General Services Administration manages all federal buildings, including courthouses.
Well, I thought so.
Huh. Hey, so Jay, maybe how you doing?
Have a chat with. Good. You?
Hello?
Yeah, you're there, Todd.
Hold the till here. I just think we need to we need to make things unpleasant for these individuals, you know? And if they're gonna start rotating in people that, you know, so that, you know, they get tired from beating on people and shooting whatever they're shooting. So they bring in another 150 and rotate out another 150 individuals. You know, let's make it a really unpleasant stay in Portland. You know, if they can't flush the toilet, if they can't get drinks of water, whatever, they have to bring stuff in. And, you know, couldn't they, like, block entrances to the building? I mean, there's a fence all the way around the darn thing. Couldn't they, like...
No, not really, because the problem is with that federal courthouse is that there's day-to-day business still going on in there. And I know what the train of thought that I lost was for a moment. You know, there were two lawsuits filed. One was the one filed that where the judge said, okay, they'll have to not beat on journalists and legal advisors. The other suit, however, was filed by the Attorney General of the state of Oregon asking for injunctive relief, and the Attorney General, for once, filed in the name of the people of the state of Oregon being abused. And the judge refused that injunctive relief and told the Attorney General, get this is the chief law enforcement of the state of Oregon. This is the head lawyer for the state of Oregon, for everybody in the state of Oregon. And this federal judge said, Attorney General, you don't have standing to sue. You do not have the right to sue in the name of the people you represent. That's like telling a lawyer that his clients aren't really his clients or her clients. And, of course, the minute I read that, Jay, I had to go and find out about the judge issuing the ruling. And further proof, further proof of my thesis that this ain't a Trump problem, this is a Republican problem. The judge who told the Attorney General of Oregon that her clients weren't really her clients is a W. Bush appointee.
Well, there's a couple ways to look at that, too. Number one, we know who this judge is, and they probably know where this individual lives. One could pull similar tactics with that individual. That is to say, protests outside the individual's house, home. Make things really unpleasant for that individual. So that's number one. Number two, I suspect the governor probably could declare an emergency of some sort and exercise emergency powers, instructing, you know, calling out the National Guard, putting a cordon around the facility, saying no business is allowed in or out until such time as federal troops leave. And I get, you know, there's business going on, but, you know, business can be delayed. Business can, you know, COVID has interrupted lives of people all over the country.
Sure.
Well, this is not COVID, but.
Right, but the problem, and we talked about this some on Friday, I think. The problem is that one constantly has to ask which of these things that we're contemplating plays into the hands of the desires of fascist thugs like Bill Barr. And if the National Guard forms a cordon around the federal building, then that could be used and would be used, I'll suggest, as a manifestation of insurrection. And in cases of insurrection, the powers of the presidency become genuinely terrifying. That's where you can do things like suspend habeas corpus and declare national emergencies.
Yeah, that's true.
Suspend elections or try. So they've got to be judicious in what they do. I still believe, you know, I still believe in the economic power of the people. And I think back to the Montgomery bus boycott that Rosa Parks got started. What I think we need, among other things, is a nationwide boycott of Enterprise for renting them the damn minivans, and a nationwide boycott of Marriott for housing the little punks. And by the way, we're so damn broke. Why are we housing them in expensive Marriotts when these little green goons don't deserve anything better than a Super 8?
I like that.
I'd say they don't deserve anything better than a jail cell.
Well, I'm in agreement, but all corporations respond to financial pressure. And there aren't enough maggots out there to pull a Chick-fil-A and run out and rent a room at Marriott to prove how much they love Trump or hate gays or, you know, whatever the issue of the moment is. And by the way, you just got a note. You got a note from Jude up in also in Washington State. She said, "How astute on his part." Yours, Jay. And said, but she's been there the last couple of weekends in Portland. She says, the front of the U.S. courthouse remains boarded up. I've walked all the way around it, and the only access are two driveways with secured doors. So they're pretty much in a siege mentality at this point anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you called in, and I hope we'll hear from you some more. It just happens that
we have
run over time. And like I said, you know, jump in if time permits. Feel free to jump in on the Friday conversation, because these are the times that try men's souls, and these are the issues.
They are indeed.
Well, people's souls, and these are also the issues that tickle and torment people's brains. Because that's the thing about the rise of fascism. When it comes along, your first inclination is to meet force with force, but then you realize that's their goal. Because they're bully boys. The history of the rise of fascism in Italy, you know, even more so maybe than Germany, the rise, because Mussolini invented the idea. The rise of fascism in Italy is instructive relative to what we're experiencing now.
With one difference, though, Italy was a relatively new country, and it had a king.
And, right.
Mussolini pretty much let the king do whatever, and that's kind of how...
And well, and there's another difference, too, and that is that Mussolini was actually... I know it's probably not popular to say, but... As among the leaders of fascism in Europe of the time, Mussolini was the most educated of the lot. More intelligent than Hitler by far. More intelligent than Franco. And so, you know, he put a lot of thought into his brutal experience.
Well, Trump can't imitate that part of Mussolini.
Precisely my point. But Bill Barr might.
Yeah.
Bill Barr might.
Yeah.
Barr is scary.
That was scary.
He's the scary one.
See? We just said, everybody said scary at the same time. That's scary.
In and of itself.
He knows the law. He knows how to pick it apart. You know?
Well, guys, it's... It's been a great conversation, but I got to ring off here so I can get the upload up. Right. And, of course, there's a brand new Malloy coming along at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. HeadOn.live is the best place to listen to Malloy. And feel free to hang out in the chat room if you want to at HeadOn.live while you listen. It can be a rousing experience. So thanks, everybody. I'm sorry we left a challenge on the table, but I thank Alma so much for making it. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going by whatever manner you do, subscriptions, Patreon, PayPal, a la carte, U.S. Postal Service. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Remember, you can be a big help to Coal River Mountain Watch if you use smile.amazon.com. 0.5% of the proceeds of your purchase will go to Coal River Mountain Watch, as long as you designate Coal River Mountain Watch as the recipient of your donation. And above all, please, if you can stay home, stay home. This is not going to get any better until Donald Trump is gone. If you can stay home, stay home. If you have to be out, wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face. Maintain your social distance, and if you see somebody hollering that they can't wear a mask because they can't breathe, and yet somehow they're still hollering, well, avoid that maggot like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.